You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
You, Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell. Yeah.
All best friends. We were all in a league of their own.
I'm ducking out, you're ducking out. Let's duck out together. See what it's all about.
Ducking out, ducking out, ducking out, ducking out.
Hi, and welcome to Ducking Out, a podcast that is already obsessed with this season of the L Word Generation Rosie O'Donnell fans. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're diking out with writer, actor, and podcaster Brittany Ashley about mommy issues.
Hey, Melody, do you remember at the beginning of the year when I said my New Year's resolution was to never bring up Rosie O'Donnell until she's a guest of the podcast?
I sure do.
I would say that I just clocked in mention number 45, and that's not even considering our off-topic episodes. What's that, you ask? Well, every week, in addition to this episode, Melody and I talk about what's going on in our lives, what's going on in gay news, what's going on with past guests, and now our thoughts, opinions, predictions, really awesome pitches for the writers for the new season of
It's a lot of that.
Q. Yeah.
It's our rewrites.
Probably one of the craziest things that could have happened with watching the premiere of The L Word. We talk about it in the off topic this week. So if you're not already, go to patreon.com/dykingout. And for $5 a month, you get an extra episode every freaking week. So get on it if you
have. Awesome.
Freaking amazing. Freaking gay. We, speaking of freaking gay, we are hosting watch parties for the L Word Generation Q. Maker's Mark, our friend Chelsea at Maker's Mark is sponsoring. They will have a Maker's Mark cocktail on draft there. It's at Henrietta Hudson. How iconic. Three giant screens. We're hosting our first one tonight. Like the night we're recording this, not tonight, the night you're listening to it.
Right.
And I got to scope out the place and the new like remodeling and everything. It's gorgeous. I love it. Henrietta Hudson has never looked so beautiful, and it's going to be chaos tonight. I'm not ready for it.
I'm glad we're going to get there early so I can walk through it because I still haven't seen the new space, but you sent me a video. I can't wrap my head around it. It's a completely new bar. I'm so excited to check it out before it devolves into dyke chaos tonight.
Yes, it's going to be a sea of dykes, and it's going to be gay-mazing. So we hope to see those of you who are in the New York area. We hope to see you there.
Every Sunday.
And lastly, real quick for all of our Cape Cod or Boston area listeners who are willing to make the drive, me, Melody, and her lover, Allie Clayton, will be performing on the Fruit Basket Comedy Show. It's going to be Saturday, August 14th, 9 p.m. at the Red Room at Velvet. So you can go on our Instagram for more details on how to reserve your spot for that. It should be a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, and we hope to see some of you U-Haulers there. What's the case thing you did this week, Melody?
Oh, God, Carolyn. Me first? Okay. Okay, I have a few things. I wasn't very active this week. We all heard my voice last week. I very much needed rest. I was recovering from Fire Island and being sick, so I was watching a lot of TV. I caught up on White Lotus. Are you watching this?
I started watching the other night, but I only got like 15 minutes in and then went to bed.
Oh my God. It is my favorite show right now.
Okay.
It's so good.
Mike White, I was hearing good things.
The writing is so amazing. The music, the tension it builds, it's gorgeous. Like the direction, everything about it. The way they explore like liberal biases. It's about a bunch of like rich white people on this expensive resort in Hawaii. And also the dynamic between the staff there.
Right.
They explore class, politics, queerness even.
Okay.
So, but they're in the latest episode, a spoiler alert, maybe like fast forward a minute. I don't know. It's not that big of a spoiler. Everyone knows. I couldn't go on Instagram without seeing so many memes already about this. There is an iconic already gay sex scene where Lucas Gage gets his butt eaten out, and it is hot. Like, I was watching these guys. It was a very quick ass-eating scene. I was aroused, okay? And I was like, I'm into this? And then after that, Allie and I caught up on Gossip Girl, and there's a lot of gay sex in that. And two very gorgeous guys have a couple sex scenes together in the new Gossip Girl reboot. And I was like, okay, I'm even more aroused. And then I just sort of floated the idea to Allie that we should watch gay porn when we have sex.
That's where I was hoping this was leading to.
Yep. And so we haven't done it yet.
Okay.
Not sex, the gay porn sex.
Yeah.
But we're gonna try to incorporate that to see how that goes.
Yeah.
The kids are all right.
Yes.
So that's how we kept validating it, which feels very gay too. Like, yeah, because Julianne Moore and right. So we can.
And we talked about it.
It is lesbian to do that.
Yeah. We talked about it in the episode with Nikki Hartz. Nikki Hartz said that's the category that we're sleeping on.
Telling you. Okay, the Gossip Girl. I know I led with White Lotus, but now that I think about it, the hottest was the gay sex scenes in the Gossip Girl reboot.
Okay,
these men are gorgeous. The way it's shot, I don't know. So much bisexual lighting too, by the way, in both the Gossip Girl reboot and White Lotus, but especially Gossip Girl.
Interesting.
So that feels pretty gay.
I got a little bit bummed when you said that there was a gay sex scene in White Lotus and it didn't involve Jennifer Coolidge.
Oh my God.
Then
she is a vision. I love her so much. The only time I left my apartment while I was resting this week was to do a show. And I was on a show with friend of the pod, Glo Butler.
And I know this because I was hanging out with her right before she went to go do the show. And I'm like, I know who's going to be there.
Oh, yeah. So Glo went up first on the lineup because she had to get back to that party you were at. And I had to get to another show I was on. So I went up second. And it was too gay. And I didn't know what to do because I was just sort of freaking out. Glo hit almost every part of my set list. Like,
really?
It was like identical. But like, obviously our perspectives are different, but we both had material about dating Southern women, material about having TMJ getting in the way of lesbian sex. Mm. Like, it was just like a lot of like similar talking
That's
points, but
specific.
Different. It was like, I don't know what to do, and just had to like go up and address it and be like, that's what you get when you put two lesbians or.
Right. So,
sometimes I'm a lesbian. If you ask my girlfriend, I'm a lesbian, but it was kind of insane. It made me think I gotta change things. I gotta get even more specific with my queerness if I'm gonna talk about it on stage.
Like the TMJ one, I would say that's specific, but it's also so universal.
Yeah.
Like, who hasn't struggled with a little bit of lockjaw?
I know. Well, You know what I'm doing, what Glow isn't doing, is actually opening my mouth and so people could hear it into the microphone.
Oh.
You want to hear it?
Sure.
Oh, did you hear that?
Yeah.
That's what it sounds registered. Like when I have lesbian sex. Right on my girlfriend's vagina.
I used to have it really bad, but it's improved. I wish I could tell you what I did, but I used to have the worst TMJ. Yeah.
It goes away. I'm just sort of resigned to it now. It got really bad in lockdown, too. I was like, that makes sense. Just 18 right. months of a clenched jaw. Yeah.
Yeah. Stress makes it worse, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
Stress is gay, too. So, wow. I guess I did manage to have a pretty gay week. What about you, Carolyn? We have a gayest thing of the week?
Yes. I mean, that party I was at with Glow was very gay. Of course, it was a bunch of lesbians sitting around talking about the L word. I went to a Dyke beer event at the Stick It Inn. There's two Stick It Inns. There's like the actual inn that's like upstate New York, and they're known for, I think they have like their own kind of cider or something like that, and they carry Dyke beer. But then they also have like this speakeasy in the East Village. So I went there to go just, you know, enjoy a couple of Dyke beers, see what the scene was, hang out.
Love a speakeasy. I've never been to a queer one. It feels very like guys. I haven't been to one, by the way, since I moved to New York, but the ones I went to in Chicago felt very like guys being like, I know a place, like date spots, you know?
Yeah.
Felt pretty hetero, but that sounds nice and gay.
This was fun. And the Loretta from Dyke Beer was bartending. It was just like very like kind of this casual, I don't know. It was nice. I enjoyed that. So that was pretty gay. I also bought a Rosie O'Donnell ornament off eBay, a Christmas ornament. And I don't even know what inspired this, you guys. I mean, well, I know.
Did you actively search for it on eBay? Because eBay is where you kind of...
Right. You have
a mission.
It wasn't like I was specifically searching an ornament. I was just looking for like Rosie O'Donnell show merch. Every once in a while, I try to see how the prices are on the jean jackets and what sizes are available. And I'm always debating, like, do I really need a Rosie O'Donnell show jean jacket? Do I not? And but instead, I got this really cute little Christmas ornament that she had put out when she was doing her show in 1998. And now I'm the proud owner of it. So that felt gay, but I would say sitting down with Cecilia and stalking her ex-wife. That was the gayest thing. For sure.
Oh my God. Okay.
Stalking of an ex.
Yeah, that makes sense. On our little doc here, I read it wrong and thought you were going to openly talk about stalking your ex's wife. And I had a little dyslexic moment. And I was like,
no.
Bold of you to just hop on the mic.
No, I mean, without giving away, I guess, too many details, but it looks like Cecilia's ex had a baby in the past year. And we're like, whoa, because we hadn't really looked into what's going on with this person's life in a while. And I don't remember how it came up. But then, you know, I kind of had to check in with Cecilia. I was like, how does this make you feel? That your ex has a baby and we don't.
And she wants a baby.
Right. Because, and we've kind of like had to put things on pause with everything going on. And, you know, we do want to resume trying, but it's just kind of been a lot. And it's a very stressful thing. So between like the stalking and then like checking in on our feelings, that was...
Get out of here. Yeah. Gay town.
So gay. So USA, gay. And then also Cecilia being like, I'm very happy with her and I just hope she's happy. I really do. I just Cecilia. Sincerely want her to be happy. It does make me feel like maybe I'm a little bit behind, but no, it's okay. So it was some sweet wife bonding time.
Tender stalking. Queer.
Yeah.
Moment.
For sure. So,
speaking of tender queer, God damn it, guys. You'll notice I cry throughout this episode. I didn't know this would happen. I cried immediately, did I not?
Yeah, you cried.
We recorded
times
this a couple weeks ago. Yeah, so just, and we'll see why.
Okay,
clearly, I have mommy issues.
Yes. We are diking out about mommy issues today with Brittany Ashley, you guys. Finally, I'm so glad that this is happening. You know Brittany from her many viral BuzzFeed videos and tons of other queer content that she's written and starred in. So funny. Just what a fun person in the community. And I'm glad we were able to make this happen. She's also the host of a podcast now called Don't Tell the Babysitter, Mom's Dead. Let's get to it. Brittany, thank you so much for being here and diking out with us today. Finally, we have America's lesbian sweetheart on Diking Out. It's about time, joining forces with me, America's weird lesbian aunt, and Melody,
America's chaotic bisexual.
I was going to say that, but I wanted you to say it.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to. Wow. What an episode this is going to be. No pressure. But
I'm so happy to be here. And yeah, it's truly an honor.
Your Wikipedia is so funny for your personal life. Can I just start off by saying personal life is just two sentences?
Brittany's mom died and she's a lesbian.
Well, that was in your early life or like career. Just for personal life, it's just Ashley resides in California, period. She is a lesbian.
It's just straight to the point. Yeah.
My favorite part of the Wikipedia is has been identified as an internet celebrity. What a use of the passive voice there. Who identified you and when? What happened?
What's funny is that, so when I saw that I had a Wikipedia page, I went in and I wanted to see, like, you can go in and see, like, who put these things. You won't get, like, it won't lead you to, like, an address of, like, the person who put these things, but it leads you to, like, resources that people used. And there was actually a bit of pushback from whoever put that in. And someone was like, I'm sorry, but I don't think that people on the internet are celebrities. And then someone else was like, actually, here's all these people. It seemed like it was perhaps like an older person who was like, not really in tune with like the way that the internet creates these personalities. And it was, I was a bit of a controversy in there for a minute of if I was worthy or not.
Like, they're online enough to edit Wikipedias, but they don't know about internet celebrities.
Yeah, it's an interesting subculture, I imagine.
I'm pretty sure it was an ex of yours.
Yeah, probably.
That's what I said. Yeah. I'm sorry, she's not a celebrity.
Yeah, because that would kill me.
How are you? What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? I'm always writing. That's just kind of, you know, I'm working on a couple different scripts at the moment. I mean, it's not like they're going anywhere anytime soon. They're just kind of sitting in my computer.
I love it.
But I also still have my podcast, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, which I'm sure will come up at some point. Through the episode, I've been learning guitar from my friend Jess and then kind of like teaching myself in between. I've been trying to get my finances right. I've been reading this book here. I Will Teach You to Be Rich. It's kind of like a grabby title, but it's not about becoming
rich. It's all
the
boring stuff. It's like 5% of your paycheck into stocks.
Exactly. And that is just something I'm 32, but I've like never learned how to take care of my finances in any way. It just kind of all sits in a savings account. I've just been trying to, I think the last year has just made me, I've always been so career focused and it's always been the only major thing I've been, like super focused on, and I would let it ruin me and destroy me. And then it would be like my only major source of joy. And aside from like, you know, personal relationships and whatnot, but I'm trying to step away from that a bit more and just be a bit more like be in control of what I can be in control of. Is just like when someone gets my script, it's the best it can be. But other than that, just try to live my life a bit more and enjoy life a bit more. Have you felt like the last year has like shifted any of your thinking?
Oh, it's like split my mind into five pieces and scrambled it around and has produced many crises. Yes.
And so I just tried to, prioritize things that I started taking vocal lessons because I've always really loved singing. It's not like I'm going to, release an album anytime soon, though that would be very fun.
Does that tie in with the guitar? Because I was wondering, like, you're not single and guitar seems like something you pick up when you're single. So what was the choice there?
I always had a guitar when I was younger. I'm not like a quick learner when it comes to learning how to read music or anything like that. So I've just always just tried to like hear something and then try and play it. But now I'm actually going through the steps of actually learning the basics and teaching myself chords instead of teaching myself just specifically songs, just trying to give myself like a broader understanding. But I've always really wanted to, and it is funny because it should align with some sort of like personal crisis, but it really doesn't. And I think that is maybe just a marker of my own growth.
Yeah, that's growth.
Yeah.
Very artist way. Have you done artist way?
I haven't, but every single person in my life has. I'm sure I have the book around here somewhere. But I have so many similar things. Like every project that I have is so very like 30-day based or something just to keep myself on track.
You also sort of recently got engaged.
Oh,
I did. How long you can say recently for, but congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we got engaged in May. She was actually going to propose in last December, but our trip got canceled, obviously, because of COVID. And it's funny because last year she would keep saying, like, I'm going to propose by the end of the year. Like, are you sure you're going to say yes? And I'd say, yeah, of course. And then when it didn't happen at the end of the year, I was like, did she change her mind? Like, there was like a weirdness of like, why isn't this happening yet? But then when the trip was coming up, it was very clear. She was like, why don't we get our nails done? And like, how about I pick out outfits for us? She's like very into fashion. I'm not. And so, it was very clear. And I texted one of my best friends and I was like, hey, if it doesn't happen, we never talk about this again. But I'm almost positive she's going to propose. And then she did. Like, as soon as we got to the hotel, she proposed. She gave me a Buffy card and it had a very sweet proposal in it because I just love cards and I love, mementos.
A Buffy card.
Yeah, it said the stakes are high.
Oh my God.
It was very sweet. And then I proposed her about three weeks later. I brought in two of her siblings from New York and Colorado. And then I put it in her little pill case.
Whoa.
Wow, what a masterclass in proposing.
In queer proposing.
Yeah, but the funny thing about when she proposed to me, because again, like we're both, neither of us wanted to do like a giant proposal in front of people. Like we're both very like, we don't want attention for this. But when she proposed to me and we were at this hotel in Palm Springs, which again, a very, very gay detail. and we went and sat by the pool like 30 minutes later. And also our server did not care. Our bartender, she like did not care at all. We were like, we just got engaged. Is it possible that we could get a bottle of champagne? Like can we order a bottle? And she was like, ah, man, there's nothing cold up here. I guess I'm going to have to go down to the cellar. Like, she just seemed so peeved that we wanted to celebrate. But anyways, then we went and sat by the pool. And this gay guy who was probably like in his 40s, he's on the phone with his husband and he seems really annoyed. And he turns to us, not realizing that we just got engaged. And he was like, ugh, never get married. And it was very much like the moment in like the Sex and the City movie where basically Miranda tells Big like never get married. But but luckily there was a bunch of queer women in the pool who, after we had told him, we just got engaged, all the queer women like erupted and they were like, marriage is amazing. And then for the next like 20 minutes, it was just like a swarm of married people like huddling over us, just like telling us how great marriage is and not to listen to this one man.
It is great. Yeah, I've done it twice. It's a great thing.
Any no notes.
Yeah, wow. I totally get your fiance's thing with proposing as soon as you get to the hotel, because that's what I did with my current wife, is that we were going to Hawaii and I'm like, I'm going to be such a fucking weirdo if I'm sitting on this ring the entire trip. Like, I wanted to wait for like a sunset dinner, but I'm like, no. As soon as we get to the hotel.
Yeah,
I like had them like kind of set up the room in advance. And I was like, I'm going to go check the room for bugs. You go get the luggage out of the car. And then I was like scrambling to pour the champagne and everything.
Yeah, that was pretty much her reasoning as well. She was like, and I never really see her that nervous, like around me at all.
Right.
And she was like shaking as she was giving me the ring. It was just incredibly sweet. And she was like, I would have just been too weird. Like it would have just, I would have been like totally silent. And she was really silent in the car. So yeah, I'm sure it was probably for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. There were all these moments where, you know, we're like flying in a helicopter and the Jurassic Park music is playing. I'm like, well, this would have been a better moment. Yeah. But honestly, like I couldn't.
Yeah, I get it. And there is no like, it to me, it was never about like, and I'm sure you feel the same way. It was like never about like a quote unquote perfect moment. I was just happy for it to happen. And yeah. And I was also nervous. It's like, it's such a huge, huge thing. And being fed like the way that it is for straight people, I think this is a conversation I've had a lot recently, is like, how big of a deal do we make our engagement at all? Like it's been so sweet when friends have made it a big deal. Like they'll come over with a bottle of champagne, or they'll just like congratulate us. And it, like even last night, and we totally forgot that like that's a recent thing that happened. But for straight people, it's like a whole like month of activities. Oh. There's like a big parties
with invitations.
Exactly.
Registries.
And I don't know if it's like a internalized homophobia thing or just us not wanting to like both of our personalities just like not really wanting to make it a big deal to everyone else. But
Yeah,
we haven't really like done, even my sister is like, do you guys want like any sort of party? Like even if it's like a Zoom party, and we're like, oh, no, don't worry about us.
Yeah. It's a slippery slope from there to gender reveals. You don't want to do what the straights are doing. Just
exactly.
Let them have their parties.
Totally. Yeah. We're trying to, try not to let that culture influence ours. For sure.
That's nice. I'm like getting ideas.
Yeah.
All right. Hawaii.
Are you in a serious relationship?
Yeah, yesterday was our 5-year anniversary.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
So it's like at this point, what's stopping us?
And is marriage something that you both want?
We know we don't want a big wedding.
Yeah.
And we like if we were, it would be boring, like tax purposes and like insurance, and we would elope. Like we know this.
Totally.
So maybe that's why it hasn't happened yet, because it feels so not so sexy.
Yeah, I get that. We were thinking about just like going to Vegas and getting married so that I could go on her insurance and so that we could like bypass some of that stuff. But then have like a larger wedding later when we're just more financially, when we're more,
when you're rich.
Exactly. Yeah.
When you finish the book.
There is a whole section in there too that, you know, if I would have read this like 5 years ago, about like financing my wedding, I would be like, whatever. But now I'm like, I can't wait to get to that chapter. so much has changed.
Brittany, tell us, what is the gayest thing you did this week?
Okay. Oh, yes.
We've covered so much gay ground.
Yes.
But let's hone in on this week, where you're at right now.
Okay. The gayest thing I did this week.
I just want to start guessing stuff for you. I'm like, did you learn a Tegan and Sarah song on the guitar?
I learned. Oh, man, this is probably not good given everything that's going on. But I learned a Grimes song on the guitar.
Okay.
We'll allow it. Was it Entropy?
What's
the song?
Or
no, it was it was delete forever. It was okay. It came up on my Discover Weekly while I was out of town, and I was like, this rules. And more than this rules, I could actually learn this. This is only like 5 chords.
Yeah.
Okay, the gayest thing that I did. Okay, well, this is kind of like sweet gay.
Okay.
Which is that sometimes I'll get requests of like, hey, we'd love it, you know, it'll be like one of those stock emails that's like, hi, Brittany. We really like your Instagram and we'd love for you to advertise for us. And I never really do them just because it's like, I get really stressed out. I'm like, I don't want to figure out how to like advertise for your beauty blender. Like, I just don't want to do this. So I will usually ignore those emails until I die. But there's one that came in and it was, I think the company name was called like Future Family. And it was, it's this company that gives loans to families, specifically like LGBTQ families who are looking to start like, you know, either like IVF or egg freezing or just the beginning, starting their family, they give loans. And I thought that was just very sweet. And so now I'm also trying to figure out like, and I'm going to like do a post for them, but I'm trying to figure out like, what is a clever on brand post that also shows that I want to have a family, which feels like really hard to do, especially given like, I don't know, it's not something that we see a ton in our community about like these frank conversations about like starting a family. Cause I think like a traditional family is not necessarily like in the pillars of what a lot of queer people or like most queer people aspire to, just because it means such different things to people. And so mm-hmm. I'm like trying to find the gay way in, but also my own like desire to like have that traditional family, which again, maybe comes back to some sort of like internalized homophobia. But yeah, it's not a very fun answer, but I'm like trying, but like I want to have kids and I want to figure these things out. But I thought that was just like a very sweet gay thing that happened, that this company like specifically targeted, or maybe, you know, maybe they sent it out to a million people, but it seemed geared towards like, you are in your 30s. Maybe this is something you're looking for. And it was just like a sweet reminder that like what I do want for my future can also be gay, even though it feels very straight.
Yeah. I think that's a great answer.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Famously, Alison Bechdel just said, I don't know, something with lentils. So it really can be anything.
Amazing.
You know?
Good.
And the consideration you put into it is very gay.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It also feels like things were aligned. Like you got engaged, you're reading this book about like financial planning, and then it's like
truly
family planning, financial planning, because we all can't just go to like an art gallery opening with our lover and trick a guy on a motorcycle into not using a condom. The traditional way. Not everyone has access to that.
I'm having such an out-of-body experience of like, if early 20s me was listening to me speak now, she'd be like, who are you, man?
I think about early 20s me a lot.
Yeah.
It's
a totally different world. It was a totally different mindset of like what was important. And it is, I've changed, man. I've changed.
Yeah. Well, let's get into our topic for today. You know, you, Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah. All best friends. We were all in a league of their own. Yeah.
The three most famous people in queer culture to have lost moms.
I'm sure like that is how they became so close, is that when they were on the set of A League of Their Own and realized that both of their moms died, that which I just find so sweet and so relatable too, because as soon as I find out that someone else, especially a queer person, has lost a parent, I feel so like gravitated towards them. Like it's like we unlock something in the other person.
Yeah. Me being a lifelong fan of Madonna and Rosie O'Donnell, I know like how much it shaped their lives and how much losing a parent when you are so young at such like a critical age. I mean, I feel like any age under 20 is like a really intense time to lose a parent. Yeah. But tell us a little bit for anybody who's not familiar with your story about losing your mom.
So yeah, so my mom, her name was Laura. She met my dad when she was like 17 and my dad was 18. Like he went to her prom with her. Like my dad had recently moved to Illinois from Ohio. And so he was newer and he's just like, you know, a stoner baseball player guy, just like a little sweetie. And they met because he was leaving Walgreens with a case of beer and his friend Scott, and she was entering Walgreens with like one of her friends, and they were like, do you want to go to a party? And they hung out that night and then like never stopped hanging out. And they had my sister when my mom was 21, and then they had me when my mom was 25. And unfortunately, when she was 27, she started having like weird health issues. She was like a lot of like stomach issues, and she didn't drink, she didn't smoke, she didn't do drugs. I mean, she didn't eat very well. Like she definitely, like she always drank Coke constantly. Like that was just like one of her vices, and ate a lot of chocolate. But she appeared, you know, obviously we live in like a super fat phobic society, but to doctors in the 90s, they were like, you look fine, you're skinny, so nothing's wrong with you. But she had to go to multiple doctors, and one of them finally diagnosed her with pancreatic cancer when she was 27. And so I was 2 and wasn't, you know, obviously it was just 2. I was just like a little blob. But she had, she was given 6 months to live, and just by pure will of desperately wanting to be alive and wanting to be a mom, because, you know, all my family members say like wanting to be a mom was like her major thing, which I'm sure is like why it's on my mind so much now, is very much related to that. Yeah. But yeah, she was sick for 4 years. So many of my memories are like we went on so many vacations because my mom just wanted to create so many memories. Even though she was only around for 6 years of my life, I have like literally like 40 home videos. I have so many photo albums like she just wanted to make, and so many like journals and letters that she wrote. She just very much wanted to make sure that me and my sister knew that we were super loved and knew that she existed, because she had this foresight, obviously, that like she wasn't going to be around. And she did try to vlog, which I believe she was probably the original vlogger. She tried to like vlog videos, but by the time she finally like mustered up the courage to do it, my dad was like, no, because she just like looked too sick. Like she just had lost like a lot of weight and just kind of seemed like she was on the way out. So unfortunately, I never got my vlogs, but yeah, she towards the end, like she wanted to make it to, this is very, I'm sorry if this, to me, it's all facts. So I'm sorry if I'm like bumming you out, but to me, it's all facts. So it's not like as sad to me yet, but
that's queer culture.
She really wanted to make it to my 6th birthday party, which she did. So that was like one of her milestones. And then she, on like the midnight of Valentine's Day, she chose to like finally give up, like as soon as, like literally as soon as like it hit midnight, she like turned to my dad and said, take care of my little girls, and then she passed away. So she chose Valentine's Day to pass. And and then I interviewed my dad for my podcast, so this is how I know so much information now that I didn't know for so long. But he had said that he like had to call the ambulance and basically told them, like, you know, he's like a Midwest dude, and he was like, if you wake up my daughters during this, like I will ruin you. He like never gets mean, but he definitely like he shielded us from what would have been like a super traumatic thing to walk out on. So they took her away, because when I woke up in the morning, I was like psyched to go to kindergarten and collect all my Valentines. I just remember sitting on the bed and my dad telling me that, my mom had passed. And it all is such a blur. It's all such a blur. And there's so many things that I don't remember if they're like memories that are have been created in my mind, or just because I've watched home videos and just because I've, you know, looked at pictures and whatnot. But yeah, I just remember it being such like a normal part of my life that, you know, my mom was in a wheelchair and that we parked in the handicap spot and that she would have like an IV when we were opening Christmas presents. Like, it just seemed so very normal to me. Another tidbit is that we also lived right next door to my grandparents because my grandpa and my mom.
I'm always so jealous of everybody who had that. My best friend lived next door to her grandma. I'm like,
I lived down the street.
It was truly like it was the best part of my childhood, which is that like my grandpa and my mom got sick around the same time. And so my grandpa passed away a year before my mom. Like, so wait, back up. Is that my grandma, my grandpa, and my great-grandma, they all lived in a house in this town called Streamwood. And yeah, when I was like two, the house next door to them went up for sale. And so it just like my dad wanted the extra help with my mom and my grandma wanted the extra help with my grandpa. And so, yeah, we moved in there and it was so great because my grandma would come over and like, my grandma like taught me how to read and she would just like play with me constantly. She was just such like a wonderful, kind person to have in my life. And so after my mom passed away, she really did. She really was so instrumental in like making sure that I was still getting so much love and so much maternal care and whatnot. And yeah, and it was it like me and my sister. So we lived, our backyard was basically where our elementary school was. And so we were the only kids in our elementary school that got to go home for lunch while everyone else had to like eat the cafeteria food because everyone, you know, it was like a smaller community. Like people knew that our mom had died and my grandma was like very beloved in the community. Like she was a lunch lady and she would like come and read to the kids and whatnot. And so my grandma and my great grandma would cook us lunch every day. And it was just like, it was such a lovely childhood for that period of time. And then my dad got remarried and then it went downhill from there. But there was a stretch of time where I didn't internalize what happened as trauma. I just internalized what happened as like, this is a fact that happened, but I get to spend a lot more time with grandma and great grandma, you know.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Oh.
Crying.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Sorry. I know you're saying it's facts, but I really, man, I'm going to work through this. I have a really, I can't deal with death.
And I'm going to, and I'm constantly working on it. I'm going to have an adult conversation about it, but I'm already like, God damn it, aww. Melody. I thought maybe like 40 minutes in this would happen.
Do you mind me asking if anyone in your life, like close to you has passed?
Aside from grandparents, no, like family in high school, I had a friend die. I've had friends like through comedy, but no, like, yeah, no one on that level. And it's just something like ever since I was a kid, like I saw Patch Adams and like had to like, I couldn't go to school. I was like deeply depressed, and I've always like the movie Stepmom, which I want to ask you about too. Like I just got really, I don't know. I have a weird, it's like hard to think about. I like get really anxious. I have anxiety. Maybe that's like a part of it, but like anytime I hear about it, I just start to like fixate and like think about like my mom dying, and I can't even say that to you.
Oh no, it's like, totally you know.
But sorry.
Oh no,
fully crying.
Totally fine.
Meanwhile, I'm over here being like, "Do you think your mom planned it that way to ruin Valentine's Day for your dad?" Just moving forward, making sure he never had.
Well, what's really funny is my aunt, who was my mom's ex-sister-in-law, because she was married to my mom's brother, and then they got divorced. But my mom stayed super close friends with her, and she ended up being my mom's hospice nurse. Like my Aunt Terry is. That like she is the person aside from my dad that like holds all the knowledge of my mom. And so my dad says that she died on Valentine's Day so that me and my sister would always remember her, which we would anyways. I feel like it was just being a little dramatic. But then my Aunt Terry told me that she died on Valentine's Day because she always wanted my dad to remember her, which I thought was really sweet.
Yeah.
So.
Bye.
See you later. I'm just gonna turn my video off. Have a good combo. I'm out. Oh my god.
And this wasn't like this. If it makes you feel any better, this isn't something I was comfortable talking about for most of my life. Like it was only until 5 years ago, four-ish, whenever I around when the time that I started my podcast, I still like didn't really talk about it that freely. It would just be like in giant spurts when I was blackout drunk in college. Like that's when it would like come out. But I never really talked about it that often until an ex of mine at that time was the most serious relationship that I had been in. And she just was very frank with me. And she was like, listen, the like patterns that we have, like the conflicts that we have in our relationship, whenever someone says like my therapist thinks, but I'm usually pretty like receptive to that if their therapist is good. And she was like, my therapist thinks that like it stems from abandonment issues from when your mom passed away. And I was like, that's crazy. And I don't understand how. And so I finally saw like a better therapist because I was seeing this guy for a while who like had an IMDb page. Like he moved to LA to become an actor and then he like pivoted, which, you know, I definitely think that you can have a second career. I'm sure if at one point, if I don't make it in screenwriting, I'm sure I will pivot to like psychology or something. And then someone will be like,
my friend is literally a screenwriter who a month ago announced that she just got into school for psychology.
Like in psychology and writing just really does go hand in hand because like when you like, I think you do need to have like a wealth of knowledge of psychology to understand why characters do what they do. And I've always just like very much loved psychology. During the pandemic, like I was taking like free college courses on psychology because I love it so much. And I've just been so like in tune lately with grief and how it affects and whatnot. But regardless, so I was seeing this one therapist for a while who never asked me about my past. It would mainly just be me like reading text messages to him and being like, should I respond with this? Like I was basically just using him as like a group chat or something. Like he just wasn't serving a massive purpose to me, but he did for like one stretch of time where I think I just needed someone to talk to. But I seeked out a really great therapist who specializes in like attachment theory and whatnot, but she has like a very like, she definitely has like big like therapist mom energy, and she, you know, like has the bangs, like she has the whole thing, like the big like fluffy bangs and like a very soft voice. Like every time she speaks, it's kind of like meditative. Like she purposefully speaks in a way that like causes you to like breathe and reflect. And her answer to a lot of things is like, just feel your feet on the ground. And I'm like, okay, cool. But in the first session, you know, I had to fill out this like questionnaire about like why I'm here. And I was like, my girlfriend said I have abandonment issues. You know, for me, I don't know. My mom died. Then my grandma died. And like everyone around me just kind of like started dying. And so in our first session, when I was just kind of going on about these conflicts that me and my girlfriend were having consistently in the present, she like, you know, leaned back and was like, you know, I think a lot of this stems from the fact that your mom died when you were six. And I like, I had to stop from laughing because it sounded like such like a funny thing to like attribute all of those things to like this event that, you know, happened like 20 something years prior. But then as I like, tried to shake off whatever that was. And I listened to her reasoning. I was like, all right, I guess there's something here. So then I started reading like Motherless Daughters, which is very hetero written, just about how like women who are, you know, girls, women who've lost their mom, how they relate to the world. But a lot, like so much of it is obviously written through like my husband or my boyfriend.
Right.
But yeah, like I started like once the idea was implanted in my brain that like, hey, this thing that happened to you, one was like super traumatic and it doesn't make you weak to admit that. It also like fully affected the way that you seek out relationships, the way that you are so hard on yourself. Like there are so many things about you, like intrinsically you, that are because of this event that happened. And no, it's not something that you could have controlled, but it is something that happened to you. And that is just like a fact that when you lose someone at like that stage in your life, it really does affect, like it's the conditional formatting stage. Like what you were saying earlier, Carolyn, right, about like how, you know, what it's always traumatic at, you know, whatever age. It just like, it, yes, it's always going to be traumatic, but there's like certain stages in your life of that, like in the development of your brain where it affects certain things.
Yes.
And so for me, it was, I believe it was the conditional formatting stage.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it's just like a veil was very much like my therapist was just explaining like, yeah, like a veil is like lifted from your eyes. Like you see at a very young age, like you have to grow up very early on. You have like, your childhood is essentially like just forever changed, and the way that you view the world is forever changed. And it makes total sense. Like even now, like I just always know that death is such a possibility. And so whenever I'd be on vacation, I would always like be looking back to like make sure my dad was around. Getting lost was always super scary for me because I was just like, will I ever be back? And whenever I would get like called into the office, I was like, is my dad going to be dead? Like, it was always like, is my dad going to be dead? Is my sister going to be dead? It's always, it just was like the immediate worst case scenario response, which I'm sure other people have too, right, who haven't lost someone. It's just like, yeah, a fear that was like very much ingrained in me. But my therapist like helped so much in getting me more comfortable with the idea that it affected me. Imagine that.
Right.
And then I started the podcast, and the first season was really talking to like a lot of my friends who had lost a mom. And that was just, it was just like so special for people to like open up and allow me to like be in charge of how I edit this. And it, you know, it never sounds like it's coming out in a story, but in every single person that I've interviewed, there's such a tragic story there, but such a sweetness to like how it's like not benefited them. I don't know. It's not weird to say like how it's positively impacted who they are as a person.
It shapes you.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
Yeah. And like that podcast has just done so much for like a community that I feel like I've built of, or for myself, not like for the world, a community I feel like I've built for myself of people that I feel super comfortable around to talk about these things with. Because as much as, you know, my friends who haven't lost a parent, or, you know, my fiance who hasn't lost a parent might not totally understand the things that are, or aren't super like it makes them sad, you know, understandably so. But there's like a whole, there's like, you know, 12 people that I know that I could turn to and be like, hey, I'm feeling this weird, sad thing. And they'll be like, I've been feeling this weird, sad thing about like, when this person, like when this famous person died, or when this happened, or when this movie came out. Like, well, movies and TV are also obviously very huge for me, and they're big in the podcast too, because we talk about how representation and of people who've lost a parent, like if it's like, you know, when it's bad or when it's like really strong. And that's something that impacted me as well, which I'm happy to go into too. But all this just...
When you say when is it bad, I think of like every Hallmark movie that's like, well, I hate Christmas my because mom, that's when my parents
exactly.
died.
Yeah. It's like, it's unfortunate that it's become such a trope as like right. a way to give texture to someone's like emotional unavailability or something. But there is right. like, there are representations that I feel like have been super strong and fundamental to me. A lot of them being very queer coded, honestly, like now and then, obviously Roberto was like written as gay. So for my episode of my podcast, because everyone that comes on, they get to talk about a pop culture moment that like really resonated with them. And then I do like a deep dive into it. But mine, I chose Now and Then because no one had been more like, I'd never seen myself so represented on screen, like my childhood so represented on screen as Roberta, who was
yes.
like, I was the only girl on my baseball team. I like beat the shit out of any guy who like said anything about, like there was one guy who said something shitty about my mom, like just to hurt me, you know, like 'cause your mom died.
Right.
And I like strangled him. It was not good. We're cool. He's alive.
I was gonna say, I hope he's dead. Yeah.
But there was like this anger and rage in me that like always came at the expense of like whatever boy was taunting me. But there was also then that like fascination with death. Obviously, she like fakes her death in the film, and there's just like such a darkness to the way like. The way that she views death, and then her friends, like juxtaposed with her friends who are like, what are you talking about? Our parents will never die. Right. There just was always just like more of a dark sense of humor with me, which has always been true. And it's certainly one of the positives that I got was just like really dark dead mom jokes.
You know, I'm now making I didn't even think that character is Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh yeah.
And that like Rosie actually didn't have a mom. I never thought about if like maybe that played a part into the casting. And just really quick, because when you're talking about like how it affects you as a kid, I just read Rosie's interview with Howard Stern from a few years back.
Ooh, I'll have to watch that.
She talks about how after she lost her mom, she started breaking her hand on purpose. Whoa. And she would break the bones in her hand so that she would be the kid at school with the cast.
Yeah.
And she
changed your
like,
identity.
Nurses.
Yeah.
Yeah. And have like, or you that, know, yeah. the, yeah, yeah. It was like getting taken care Aww. Of by nurses, and then also going to school and no longer being like the girl with the dead mom. You were like the girl with the cool cast with all the doodles on
totally.
It.
Yeah, no, anyway. Absolutely. That's very, that's so astute that she like psychologically was able to like figure out that's why she was doing things. Yeah.
Probably years later.
Oh, for
sure. She probably didn't know. Like at the time, she'd be like, why do I keep crushing things into my
hands?
Totally.
Yeah. And like, so Roberta was originally written as gay, and then the studio was like, no.
Because she's a gynecologist.
Right.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. You read the same interview. Yeah. Insane.
Yeah. Oh, it is my favorite movie of all time. I could quote it from start to
yes. Yeah. But yeah, like, so Roberta was like, that was, to me, that was like the most I had seen myself. Because I was also like a massive, I don't know if we still use the phrase tomboy, but like that is the best way that I could describe myself. The only girl on my baseball team, I would wore like, you know, JNCO long jean shorts with always like a backwards Cubs hat. Like I just was, I played like with the guys always. Like I just very much, there wasn't like a massive femininity that existed in me. And so I've always felt like teen girls in films that lose their mom are very queer coded because there's like a femininity that's like removed from them. And that's something that I've talked about with some of my friends too, who've lost a mom. Like there isn't that model of femininity that's there for you. Like nobody's like doing your hair anymore. Like at a certain point I was doing all of my hair for yearbook pictures. And like in second grade, I cut my own bangs. It looked like it was cut by a computer. It was really bad. But you like I didn't learn how to like use makeup. I didn't learn how to like shave my legs. I didn't have someone like, for better or for worse, I didn't have someone like forcing the societal beauty standard on me. So I just was very much fumbling through it.
Also the movie My Girl.
Yeah. Wait, did her mom die in that?
Yeah, her mom was dead. So it was her dad Dan was Aykroyd? Raising her. Yeah.
In the funeral home.
Yeah, in the funeral home. And then that's why she was kind of weird with Jamie Lee Curtis's character, because that it was like the first person the dad seemed to be dating. Yeah. And she was like cool with her until the dad started dating her. But she was very much like tomboy and like the grandma lived with them and all that stuff.
I gotta rewatch this film.
That grief. You have to rewatch it. It's also like super queer. She's like so queer.
Yeah. Anna Chlumsky always like, that makes sense why in my mind I always kind of like attributed her as like queer coded. It makes sense.
Right.
Yeah. And same with like, even like Lainey Boggs and She's All That. There's like a queer codedness to her that she has like a darkness, like outsider vibe because of this thing that happened. With 10 Things I Hate About You, I guess they never like explicitly said if their mom left or if she died. But like Kat Stratford, very queer coded as well. Just because again, yeah, like the outsider vibe and the like not super adhering to like the societal beauty standard in the way that other teen girls would be like really wanting to be super feminine and whatnot. And so it is funny, like even again, as like a 32-year-old, when my fiance and I are about to like go out to something and I watch her do her makeup, I'm like, it doesn't even like register for me. So sometimes I'll be like, can you do my makeup? And she loves it. But yeah, there's just so many like of the quote unquote basics that I feel like I didn't totally get, but I also didn't inherit any of that drama of having, I think for a lot of women, unfortunately, like the way that their moms talk about their body or the way that their moms talk about aging can really impact like the girl, the way that the woman grows up in terms of how they view aging and how they view like weight gain and whatnot. So for better or for worse, I've evaded so much of that. And I have like a very healthy relationship with aging and my body and whatnot. A lot of stuff to unpack.
I love that these are all these movies you mentioned are all from around like late 90s, like when you were a kid and watching them, but obviously like processing all of this.
Totally.
Later.
Yeah. Like in the 90s for me is the time for me. And it very much could be because this is when like the major moments in my life happened, but like 90s alternative rock, 90s female fronted bands, 90s films, like it's all 90s TV shows, like Buffy's my favorite show, like, you know, the late 90s, you know, high school rom-coms are always my favorite. And yeah, all of my favorite bands were very much popular in the 90s. So it is something.
Oh, another queer coded character whose mom had passed in a late 90s movie, Never Been Kissed. There was Lily Sobieski's character.
Yeah.
Do you remember? I'm realizing.
Yeah, there it is. It's,
this was a thing.
Yes, definitely a thing. And it, I think it also made me a little bit confused about when I was figuring out my own identity of being gay. Like it totally, like I didn't fully start to realize it until like the end of high school, beginning of when I started college. But when I look back, I'm like, you know, it was hard to be like, was I just like a tomboy or did I like, you know, did I like really like girls? And it turns out I was both. Right. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You did mention Buffy, Melody, permission to go there.
Go there.
Okay.
You live there.
Right before you jumped on, I was like, Melody, you're lucky she didn't pitch Buffy because Melody hasn't watched Buffy and I'm just dying to talk about it whenever. When you watch things, and this is a Buffy spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't, you know, gotten with the program yet. When you watch something like the episode where Joyce died, the body, that episode, I'm going to cry now. Like, that episode destroys me every fucking time. It's like one of the saddest. I'm getting choked up. One of the saddest episodes of TV I've ever seen. When you watch that, I imagine you have a very different experience of it. Like, can you watch it and you're like, yep, been there, done that, or like, does it destroy you in like a different way?
So that's interesting. It doesn't destroy me. The episode after does destroy me. So the body I can watch, like, I can be fine. The only part that actually like really like I can enjoy it for like the cinematic experience that it is, and that it's so well executed, so well written, so well acted. I think because I don't have to project my own like fear of my mom dying, I can just watch it and be like, yeah, this is a thing that happens. Like, I can actually enjoy it rather than like fear what it might mean for me because it already happened. That thing already happened. The part that I love most in the body is when Amber Benson's character, Tara, is sitting in the hospital with Buffy and reveals to Buffy like, hey, my mom died too. And Tara is now the only person around Buffy who can relate. And they had never really related before. Like, it was just, Tara was just her best friend's girlfriend that, you know, Buffy was never homophobic by any means, but she definitely didn't try to include.
She was weirded out.
Like, none of them tried to include, and which I thought was very realistic. You know, none of them tried to include Tara into their group in the way that they included Oz. Like, it just was fact that Tara was a bit of an outsider in a way. And so this was a moment where Tara, being the absolutely wonderful human being that she was, being like, hey, I know that we're not super close, but I would love to extend this thing. And so that, I feel like, is like a code in like the dead mom club, is like, if there is someone tangentially around that like has lost a parent, I feel like it's truly my duty to just be like, hey, if you ever want to talk, it happened to me as well, I'm here, because it does just help so much. But like I said, the episode after is the one that destroys me, because it's, sorry, spoiler again, but it is the episode where Dawn, who is Buffy's younger sister in high school, decides that life is awful without Joyce and she wants to do a spell to try and bring her mom back. And she goes through the spell with Spike. She's being told like, hey, just want to let you know that, you know, your mom might come back, but not the way that you really want her to. Like, she might not come back as like a human. She might come back as like, you know, a demon, a vampire, like some sort of zombie version of her. Like, she's not going to be the mom that you know and love. She's just going to be like the casing of your mother, basically. And at the very end of the episode, the last 5 minutes, Buffy becomes aware of the fact that Dawn did this like ritual and is like, wait, what the fuck are you doing? And they get in this big argument about how Dawn is upset with Buffy because Buffy hasn't expressed emotion. She hasn't cried, which is also something I very much related to, especially in my sibling relationship. Like, not to be like, I'm Buffy, but I definitely felt more Buffy in that way of like, I don't cry about it often, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't like kill me. And so they're getting in this argument, and then all of a sudden you see this like silhouette of like a zombie like creature outside of the window. And it is Joyce. And the only way to stop this from happening is there's a picture of Joyce and you have to rip it in half. And you think the whole episode that Dawn is the one who really needs her mom back. But then at the very end, Dawn is the one who rips the picture because Buffy isn't strong enough to do it because she wants her mom back maybe even more than Dawn does, but she doesn't know how to say it. So that is the episode that like destroys me even more.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Melody, are you sold on Buffy now? Does this?
I've been sold on it. I used to watch like random episodes on the WB because like my friends did, but I like didn't understand. I was a little I'm 32 too. So like when it was on, I was like not really getting it.
Right.
And I like loved the movie.
Oh, the movie rules.
I used to always rent the VHS. I loved that. It's just been something I've been putting off. Oh really?
Yeah.
It's like canonically this story, you know, the story of like what happened to Buffy before she moved to Sunnydale. Like it is, there's a comic called Origins, which is basically like the, you know, the season two finale where they like build out where Buffy was before Sunnydale. It's basically that meshed with the story of Buffy in the film, which is very cool. Origins. Check it out.
Amazing. I will check it out. I guess then related to that, you know, being a queer person, and I feel like we're prone to the occult. and did you ever look for signs from the other side? Did you ever try to like go to a medium or something to get some type of like message from your mom?
I've done a few things. I mean, obviously when I was in middle school, me and my friends tried to do a seance where we brought her back, of course. Right. Like that.
Some Ouija board.
Or just tried to get messages from her. I definitely like when I remember, this is such like a silly thing to talk about, but I remember when I was a kid, like I can see it all so clearly, but I must have been like 8. And I had all my quarters and I could hear the ice cream truck going down the street. And I think I had like 3 quarters, but I was like, fuck, I can't get, you know, the Mickey Mouse bar, whatever the fuck I wanted. But I only had 3 quarters. And so I like shook the quarters in my hand and I like called to my mom and was like, please, mom, I would love another quarter. And then when I released my hand, there was 4 quarters, which again, it might have just like maybe it was just like sticking to the other one, or maybe it was like in my bedding or something. I had a very messy room, but I remember that being like, whoa, there's someone on the other side. So there was like that. I would say friends with an exorcist that lives in Los Angeles, who's also queer. And I went to her.
The most LA relationship. Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm friends with an exorcist.
And I've gone to, she's done some seances. And, you know, whether you believe it or not, my mom has come through twice. And it was both just like very, you know, even again, I am kind of like a skeptical person, but even if it was total bullshit, it totally got me and totally made me feel like there was something larger at play, and it made me feel really good to hear my mom coming through my friend basically telling me like, be less hard on yourself and like you're doing great and whatnot, because I think there is so much guilt that I have for the last like 20 something years. Like when I was in my 20s, I was just like such a mess. And when I was in my teens, I like never really thought to like talk about my mom a lot because I didn't want to like bum people out. And I thought that it was just better for like, it made me like approach the trauma better if I just never talked about it. And so I think I had a lot of guilt through the last like 20 something years of just like not feeling like I dealt with it in the best way, or not feeling like I've honored her in the way that she watched me do a lot of keg stands and watched me had a lot of really bad sex. But I think about that and I think I can't help but feel like guilty, or feel like maybe I'm not the person, like maybe I didn't turn out to be the person that she would have wanted, or stuff like that. And so when there was that moment where even if it, you know, coming through and it's totally fake, like being told like, you're doing great, stop being so hard on yourself. It was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe like if it's coming from my mom, like maybe I will be less hard on myself and I will, give myself more compassion and whatnot. So yes, I have done those types of things. And yeah, they've always been helpful.
I just went to a spiritualist community called Lilydale in New York, and it was my first time there, and they brought like a medium in, and we went, I mean, they have mediums live there. It's a town full of mediums. And then, but this one came in from out of town and he did this like 2-hour session, whatever. And I'm a skeptic, but like I'm also like agnostic. So I'm open to believing in whatever. Yeah. But I walked away from it just being like, this is a great thing, whether or not it's real. These people are like hearing something that will only help them and make it. It's just like a net positive in my
totally.
Book. So I'm like, go for
and
it.
Like,
it's nice to have something to believe in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that my friend, she didn't charge any of us money. Like, we would just bring like a bottle of wine or something. You know what I mean? Like, the times that we've done this, it's not like she is out to con us out of money and tell us these things. Like, she is doing it because she believes it's like a healing practice. And so I think that, unfortunately, like, the mediums and like that whole spiritual side, I think, has gotten somewhat of a bad rap because there are people who swindle and because there are people who like are like, yeah, I'll do it for $5,000. I'll talk to your dead grandma. But then they're like, there's such a hopefulness when, or there is, there's something very kind about the fact that she did these things for free, and it makes me believe in them more than if I would have paid for it, honestly.
Yeah.
Are you going to, this is morbid.
No, it's okay.
In planning your own family, like, take a note and like try to fill as much memories, like childhood memories specifically, as possible with your kids? Or is this shaping how you're going to implement any of those practices?
100%. Yeah. And also, it's like, my fiance, Christina, is so wonderful. And she had like somewhat of a traumatic, like, she had a traumatic childhood. It wasn't the same childhood as mine, but she had her own experience, and she really wants to, as much as I want to have such a loving, positive family experience, she wants that just as much. And she doesn't really have like a lot of pictures or a lot of videos from her childhood. Like, that's something that she brings up quite a bit. And so I know that that's super important to her. So like, that is going to be super important to me as well. We were actually just talking about, because of this future family influencer opportunity, we talk about like baby names constantly, but we just like unlocked that we're going to try and name, you know, one of our kids after my grandma that we lived right next door to, and that like Laura would be a middle name, you know, for one of our kids. Like, we definitely talk about, she's made it such a point to like make sure that my mom and my grandma are such like a part of our kids' lives. And it for sure affects how I want to raise my kids, just like in such a sweet, loving way, an accepting way. And yeah, I'm very scared to like love things too much and either to lose them or me be lost. But I just have to get over that. And I think it's also affected the way I view aging as well. That's something that's coming up with my friends a lot lately, of like friends getting work done and friends like wanting to stop the aging process. And I think that for me, I'm like, oh, I think it's like I've surpassed my mom's age now. Like, my mom passed when she was 31. Right. I'm 32. And so I'm like trying to see it as, and I think I'm almost there of like seeing it as a very beautiful thing, that when I get like, you know, little wrinkles, little lines, this is something that she never got to have. And it's like being able to age for her and seeing it as, yeah, like a positive, cool thing. Oh, sorry.
Sorry. No, I'm sorry. I need therapy.
No.
Well, really, I'm such an asshole crying over a Buffy episode when here Brittany's like pouring her heart out to us, and I'm just asking stupid questions.
No, you guys are both handling it perfectly. And I think it's, you both have had wonderful questions. You both have been so kind. I think that you've made me feel very comfortable and very happy to be vulnerable.
Oh, and you have made me realize, like, I need to think about abandonment issues more. Aww. Like, that is very much a root to a lot that I didn't, like a latchkey kid like myself could be have abandonment issues just from like having immigrant parents. Like now I'm realizing like I was so afraid of my mom dying constantly, but I was just always alone. Like I would like they were just constantly working and then going to like night classes and just like trying to provide. So like I had this rock that I would like rub and there were no cell phones. Like I just knew at a certain point my mom would be off work and there would be like some in between time before she went to night classes where I would get to like see her, but I would be so afraid. I would just like was convinced she might die on the highway on the way home. It was like an irrational fear that I fixated on. And I had this like marble rock that I used to rub feverishly. And like it, like the color faded on it. Eventually there was like a groove. Like I was just like so afraid. It is a form of abandonment issues. Like they were there. I wasn't literally abandoned by my mom, but like
there was a large absence.
And I feel like we got to do a whole episode on abandonment issues now.
Yeah. Have you ever, sorry, this is such also a gay thing to say. Have you ever read Attached?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Attached is great. It's kind of like a workbook in a way. Like you do take a little quiz to figure out what, you know, and it's not like it's not 100% accurate, obviously, because no one has that much self-awareness to know a lot of these things, but it really does help parse out like why you may feel the way that you do and why you may seek out the relationships that you do and like the, you know, the differences between like anxious, avoidant, secure. And I'm curious if that would be a helpful read.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, before the get rich one, I'll get sorted in that way first.
Yeah, it goes in order.
You have to read
Motherless Daughters, then Attached, then I Will Teach You to Be Rich. Yeah.
Yes.
And then when it comes to dating, you mentioned, you know, that an ex kind of pushed you toward therapy or toward talking about it more in therapy.
Deeper therapy. Yeah.
Right.
I was like, I'm in therapy. I read texts to my therapist. Is this not therapy?
As like my wife and her therapist, she's just like showing our like renovations to her. I'm like, what are we paying her for? Yeah. Like, I think you just need a friend, not a therapist. Like, why? But can you now really identify the behaviors or the things that you seek in partners that you can attribute to the fact that you lost your mom when you were
young? Yeah. I mean, I think that I just see so much of like a healthy growth of who I like. I think I used to, and again, not necessarily sure if I was like the reasons I was immediately drawn to someone, but certainly the reason that I stayed in things when I was in my 20s was like there were people. I dated a lot of women who are very emotionally withholding, who maybe who weren't very like warm. Like I had to just like crack away and try and like get the warmth. And I wanted to be the one to make them be soft and sweet, even if they were like, you know, in college, I like dated this girl who was literally known as like one of the biggest bitches, but I was like, maybe I can make her sweet. And that's trauma. So I just see such a, but then people who were very sweet and like would be able to give me a healthy thing, like that really freaked me out. So I was really attracted to people who were very avoidant. Because and then I was avoidant to people who were able, either were secure or anxious, or were able to give me these things because I was not ready to like feel what it would be like to really love someone and then be able to lose them. Like my losses were like, oh, well, I knew that I wasn't going to date this person forever because they like cheated on me over the weekend. So the loss wasn't like as giant because I like knew it was coming. But yeah, I think as my late 20s started to, in my late 20s, I think I just started to be more open to being intimate. I think like this is the first relationship where I've ever worked through conflict. That's crazy. Like before we would have conflict and then we'd either be done or we would just like I would never talk about it again. Or they would never talk about it again. But she's so warm and she's so sweet. And she made me feel instantly comfortable, like talking about my mom and like asked me questions. And she just made me feel very comfortable very quickly. And she wants to be a mom and she wants to be a great mom. And so I think that was like also something that in the beginning was like, this person's different and I'm not crazy. So yeah, it's changed who I go after 100% of just being in a more healthy headspace to be like, okay, I'm ready to like be in an actually really vulnerable relationship where we actually tell each other what's on our minds, where we can have conflict, but aren't afraid that the person is going to leave. Like that to me was the biggest thing of like, hey, you can talk about something that bothers you and not have to hold it in because like no matter what happens, everything's going to be okay. We're still going to be here. Cause I was so afraid of conflict. I was so conflict averse because I thought it meant that the person would go away or the person would leave, or I felt like I had to just like take it all, to just be more accommodating so that, but that's like so not healthy. That was, so I think that I stayed in a lot of those things because I was just like, I don't know how to leave because I don't want them to leave. Like it. Yeah. If that makes any sense.
I feel like I need to take notes for my therapy session tomorrow.
I know.
There was a lot there that I related to.
Yeah.
Hard.
I think maybe subconsciously I wanted to like earn someone's admiration, but I also knew that like this person would never be able to allow me to feel vulnerable. So it was like, it was at a safe distance. So in a way I'm able to look back on relationships that some of them were definitely toxic, but I'm able to look back on it and be like, oh, my, I played a hand in it. Obviously, like the fact
that I didn't,
you know, if I was in those relationships now, like I would have been like, hey, what's going on? Like, this isn't cool. What's happening? Here's what I'm worth, you know, all these things. But being the like young gay person who didn't only thought that she was going to have one relationship and that I would just have to make it work because it's the first one is so loaded and it has so many expectations for you. And it has to stand for so much. I just allowed myself to go through so many things that just set a pattern and set a dynamic of this person just doing kind of whatever she wanted to me. And I played a little bit of a hand in it because I wasn't ready to be really intimate with someone. So I was able to like be at a safe distance from intimacy in a way.
And I get that too with your fiance now, because my wife is the first person who really is kind of everything you described it with your partner. She's just so like warm and loving and caring and loves me in a way that I wasn't loved in my previous relationships. Mm-hmm. And it freaked me out a lot at first. And it took a while to be like, I can't accept that this is weird. And then my therapist is like, no, it freaks you out because now you have something you're like actually afraid of losing, where before you had things that you were like okay with losing.
Yeah, definitely.
And
not to get too queer about it, but I think that both of us like help soothe each other's mommy issues in a way. I think that we talked so much about our childhood and how we were parented or how we weren't parented and how we want to be parents that I think that we really try to like heal the other person and accept the other person in ways where they maybe didn't feel accepted. And like, I do little maternal things like I fill up her pill case. And so that's why
I fill up my partner's pill case. And that's the queerest thing. I know.
So maybe that's the gayest thing I've done. Oh, but like, that's why it was putting her engagement ring in the pill case was like, it sounds really silly, but it was like it was a very intimate thing to do of like, on Thursday, you take this. Yeah, it's a very healing relationship and it's very special in a way that no other romantic relationship I've had has like even gotten close to being that intimate. Like it always felt, for the most part, so many of them felt like they were just on the surface and we were just like playing these roles. And then once it got to something real, which was a conflict that hurt one of us, we were like, yeah, never mind. And then we would go our separate ways and then run into each other at a party like a year later and be like, hey, what's up? And with queer relationships, it's, I think, sometimes hard to know like what the roadmap is or what is acceptable because so much of what we've seen and taken in has been so gendered that it's hard to know like not what our roles are, but like, who's allowed to be. I think as I've gotten older, I've been more attracted to not necessarily what someone's like presentation is, but what someone, how someone makes me feel. Like if someone makes me feel like I'm cool, like I don't feel like I have to be either like super feminine or like feel like I have to be more like commanding or like, or yeah. I don't know. Like I like just being able to feel like the way that I dress, the way that I am, the way that I access my emotions, what I'm interested in, that's all cool. Like that's all good, because I've certainly been in relationships, and I'm curious if you two feel the same, where like you felt like, I've dated some women where I feel like I've had to be like their little girlfriend, and that's freaked me out. And then I've also been in relationships where I feel like they're my like high maintenance girlfriend in high heels, and I'm like the like schlub in a beanie or something. Like I feel like I've been in so many of these different dynamics where I just didn't know what I was looking for. And I felt like I was just kind of like thrown into a dynamic that I didn't really sign up for.
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that. Just like role playing or just like trying on different costumes in past relationships. And my partner's a lot like Carolyn's, and we have a similar dynamic where I've never been loved like this before, like so purely. And we're both very like verse, middle of the road,
totally,
like everything's like very, we're both in the middle with like how femme we can get or how like, but like we're just always like, I don't know, there's no designated roles, and I think that's what's for me. I was really confused through my 20s, and it really would line up with like, I guess my hair's shorter, I'm 25, so I'll be the more like masculine, and then like it just felt like bad acting
totally
for a lot of the, my 20s.
I absolutely feel the same way. I look back on pictures of me in my early 20s, and like when I would like try to wear dresses and look super femme to try and like, you know, fit that mold, I was like, oh God, like I felt like a little boy, like wearing his mother's earrings or something. Like it just totally didn't, like it didn't fit with who I actually was, but it was like attracting a certain type of person that I was like, I guess this is correct. I feel the same way. We both like get ready in like 10 minutes flat. We both like, very like verse. I feel like when I've dated some people were like, I have to always be the top, or like when I've always had to be the bottom, I'm like, this feels like, this doesn't feel like what I want. Like I enjoy being able to always kind of like ride the line of these two things.
Yeah. Well, I'm so happy for all of us.
Yeah. We're all doing so great.
We are killing it.
Well, I want to thank you for just letting me cry into
this. Oh my God. Like, my pleasure. Yes. Truly my pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you for talking about all of this. And if people want to hear more, they should listen to your podcast.
Yes.
Which I love the name of it.
Thank you. Yeah. Growing up, I watched Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead so much. It also probably like, that was one of mine and my sister's favorite movies that we would get from Blockbuster constantly. So I knew that like that imagery of the poster is what I wanted my podcast art to be, which Christine Tuna, queer artist, created for me.
Amazing.
Yeah. My podcast is called Don't Tell the Babysitter Mom's Dead. It's available on Spotify. It's available on iTunes. And I interview other people who lost a parent. And then we talk about a pop culture thing.
And if people aren't already following you, where can they follow you?
Yeah, they can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Britt27Ash. It's BRITT27ASH. Wasn't a very well thought out screen name because I got it in college and I was like, I'm never going to be dumb. Like, I'm just, this is what I do to talk to my friends. And then as time goes on and more people follow, you're like, well, shit, now I can't change it.
Now that you're an internet celebrity, verified
by now
Wikipedia.
I have numbers in my name like a loser. No, it keeps me humble.
At least it's not the year you were born. I feel like not. Whenever a friend gives me their email address and it's like
cutie girl 1987,
I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, we're all just proud of it. Like when we make the email address like years back, and then it's just revealing eventually.
Yeah.
My first AOL email was BritSync 71993204, because I was obsessed with Brit. I was obsessed with NSYNC. And so my dad was like, make it BritSync. And then AOL gave me like 9 numbers at the back.
Right.
Terrifying.
Miss Frizzle 1228. Okay.
Yeah.
What?
So 90s.
Yeah. Okay, out of here, Miss Frizzle.
My birthday, December 28th. Okay.
Ah, December 27th.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Look at that. Mm-hmm. We didn't Capricorn establish. Queens. Why do we always have Capricorn guests lately? Yeah.
Yes. This week, you're our second guest this week.
Yeah.
To be a Capricorn. Love it.
We are a good people.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. No matter what they say. Yeah.
Now I'm thinking, I think my first AIM screen name might have been Scream and then a bunch of numbers because I was obsessed with the movie Scream and Nev Campbell and her bangs.
As you should be. I named my cat Sydney Prescott.
Oh my God. Sydney Prescott, another character with a dead mom.
Yeah.
Wow.
For sure.
Who is also a lesbian. Sydney Prescott is for sure a lesbian. Yeah. If you ever want to talk about it.
I would love to.
Okay, great. Because she does have an Indigo Girls poster on her wall and clearly hates getting intimate with men.
Yeah, yeah, I would too.
And anything else that you want to plug? Any upcoming projects to keep an eye out for?
I mean, just always keep a keen eye on me. I'll do stuff soon. Things will make their way to the surface. I have a website, brittanyashleyfunny.com, and I have a lot of my old sketches on there. I wrote a Buffy the Vampire Slayer, My So-Called Life crossover spec script last Halloween. I plan on doing another. I'm going to try to do a new crossover spec script every Halloween because Halloween's my favorite holiday. But that is available to read on my website if you want to take a gander at what it would look like for Angela Chase and her friends to go to Sunnydale during a ritual that Spike is putting together. Yeah, just keep an eye out on me. I'm here.
Great. Awesome. Thanks so much again, Brittany. This was so much fun.
Thank you so much. This was lovely.
Yeah, so just to remind all of our listeners, last week I said the gayest thing was that I cried in therapy, detailing the plot of a Buffy episode, and that episode is obviously The Body, and I can't talk about it without crying. And anybody else feel me on that? Just like every time it wrecks me, every time I watch it, every time I think about it, every time I talk about it. Is that relatable?
You know I'm not a Buffy head yet. But I know you're not alone in that.
Yeah. When I was telling my therapist about this episode, I was also like, it's a really good show. And like trying to sell my therapist on Buffy. But my therapist gives me no information. So I have no idea if my therapist has ever...
Oh, man.
Has any idea. Today in therapy, I was actually talking about the L word. And and then I'm like, does she know what I'm talking about? When I bring up Alice, does she know?
Interesting. I, with every therapist I've had, ask them questions about themselves at the beginning so I can trust them. Is that normal?
No.
I know my last therapist, I knew her hamster's name. I knew she was queer and poly. I knew what shows she liked. Yeah.
No.
That's not normal, huh?
I don't think that's normal. Though, I don't know. I'm always surprised when people know things about their therapist, but just because with mine, it's so, she does not say anything about herself. And speaking of therapy and helping people through their problems.
Look at us smashing these transitions, and I sort of broke that momentum by calling it out, but I'm just so proud of us. Let's get into our listener question.
From a patron.
Yes, from a patron. Okay. I've realized that I have a very toxic friendship with my first girlfriend and ex. I'm planning on ending this toxic relationship because I can't seem to move on from her cheating on me, especially when I hang out with her and her daughter, the result of the cheating.
Okay. Ooh, juicy.
Okay. I love all my friends. They mean everything to me, more than any relationship I've had. But this woman crosses the line all the time with her needing my advice or help every time she cheats on someone.
Chaos.
Yes. She doesn't even speak of our past, like it never happened. I asked her to dinner, and I'm going to break off the friendship in person. Is this a good idea? Or should I just leave it alone and never speak again? Well, those seem to be two extremes.
Yeah. agree. I'm like, the truth is somewhere in between that you need to find. I mean, kudos to you for breaking it off. There were more details in this. It sounds awful. I'm telling you, you probably have the stank of ex-girlfriend on you. Like, when they are hanging around you all the time, because I know that you've been, like, frustrated on the dating scene. It's, they can tell, people can tell. They can pick it up when there's an ex in the orbit, and, yeah, and they don't want to go anywhere near that. You got to kick that ex to the curb.
Waft the stench away.
Yes, you don't want that near you. So,
well, it seems like there are some lingering feelings. Do you not pick up on that too from that line? She doesn't even speak of our past like it never happened.
Yeah, I don't know if I would think that maybe there, I mean, there could be some lingering feelings. If you like this person enough to be friends with them and at one point you were attracted to them and then it like ended because they, you know, cheated and were shitty and toxic and whatever. So I could see that complicating things. But I can also see that this person's just like awful, and that's got to make you feel very small and not great about yourself. If, you know, if this ex and relationship was like a big thing for you, and for them it's not even worth something bringing up, it's something that they can just kind of breeze past and pretend never happened. That's really painful and horrible and can like mess with your confidence, I would think. So
yeah,
even
it's
more
not
reason.
A good conversation over dinner. It's not like something you need to go
spend
out
much
and
time on
time money
right
prep for.
Yeah, I mean, I know it sounds like you're very close and you know the daughter and everything, but dinner, you're being trapped in there. Plus, you're going to probably bring it up toward the end of dinner. So then you're having this like whole nice, friendly conversation, whatever, the whole time. It's going to be increasingly awkward. And then you're going to give yourself an opportunity to psych yourself out of whatever. Meet for coffee and get your coffee in a to-go cup. Or your tea or whatever, so that when things get weird, you can just leave.
Smart.
And don't leave anything behind. Dinner, you got to stay there till the end to pay the bill. No.
Change the aggressive.
Plans. Yeah, it's very aggressive. Change the plans to coffee.
Definitely like make your feelings clear. Yeah, don't just like break it off.
Yeah. And that, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Get this person out of your life.
Snip,
make
snip.
Room for new relationships, new friends, new lovers. You gotta clear the runway for that. So
and bad juju.
Yeah, but very proud of you for, you know, hitting your breaking point. No, for taking the initiative to do this, putting something on the calendar. Just maybe change that reservation to a coffee meetup, and then maybe make plans with somebody else for dinner afterwards.
Yeah, save the dinner for a new clean slate relationship, friendship, anything but this.
Yes. Well, if you have a question that you would love for us to answer, you can send it to dykingout@gmail.com. Be sure to follow us for updates on all upcoming shows, whether they are watch parties or comedy shows or all that good stuff on Instagram, both at dykingout.com and our personal handles. I'm at TGI Carolyn.
I'm at Melody Kamali.
We love posting shows and our stories and things that are coming up there. So make sure you're seeing our stories, right?
Yes.
That's where the info is. I've been so bad at updating my website with show dates.
Oh my God. I just realized I haven't updated mine in years. So
yeah, it's been since COVID.
Don't
I
go there.
Yeah, put a a date up there. So you're going to catch it on our stories. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. We hope nobody was too triggered by mommy issues. We love you all. Thank you. We'll see you
next Tuesday.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.